Hello, this is Chaz from Quiet Speculation, and you're listening to the QS Cast. If you're a QS subscriber, you're hearing this as soon as it gets published. If you're not a subscriber, you had to wait a few days. If you want to listen to the podcast as soon as it's published, or you just want to know more about Quiet Speculation, go to quietspeculation.com/tour and check out everything we have to offer.
Welcome back, everyone, to the QS Cast. Tarkan and I are joining you for a quick one. What's up, Tarkan? What's going on?
Hey, how's it going, everybody? Nice to chat with you guys again. Nice to chat with you, Chaz, and
what's
speak
going
to
on?
Everybody.
Yeah.
But
of course,
we took a last week off because it was the holidays. So, how was your Thanksgiving, Chaz? Everything good?
It was good. It was really good. Got to eat a lot, got to relax a little bit, and just hang out and get destroyed on fantasy. So thank you, Efren, for ruining my playoff chances. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, well, thank you so Chaz, much. For ruining my playoff chances. So
I guess we're even, right? Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting because I'm based in Asia right now, and they don't celebrate Thanksgiving, obviously. So I actually forgot. I forgot to call my parents because I completely forgot.
That's horrible.
It's terrible.
That is terrible.
It's really terrible. And then I realized, like, oh my gosh, I have to call my family. So yeah, it was pretty bad. But I am going home for the winter holidays, or the Christmas, and that the December holidays. So I'll be coming back, and I definitely won't have any issues forgetting that one. So,
well, it's good to have everyone here. With just kind of everything, with everything going on, it's going to get a little hectic here. So we're going to try and cast as many times as we can. So let's just kind of run through a couple quick things. Tark, a few products released. I don't really know if any of them really are worthwhile, in terms of paying attention to them right now. I mean, from the Vault Transform, Iconic Masters, you have Explorers of Ixalan, and then we have Rivals of Ixalan, like pretty much right around the corner. We saw a couple of cards get leaked through some various channels there. We have like three cards maybe, but right now I'm pretty much just not buying into any of this stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting because from the Vault Transform, I don't know concrete numbers, but it seems like it's harder to get than I would have expected,
sure.
At least for a good price. So yeah, I mean, it might be one to watch. I certainly am not buying. I think people are struggling to find it at MSRP. I think that's
they
the catch
are,
right
yeah.
now, but I don't
I think
know if
like the
wrong.
Normal price is like 60-ish, 50s, high 50s, low 60s.
Yeah. So, I mentioned this one, I think once on Twitter. I'm really not a fan of this From the Vault lore. I actually think it's like one of the worst ones, if not
what?
The worst one.
This
I'm just not
from the
into
vault.
It, man. This From the Vault. This From
it
the Vault
has
of the
to be
From
a
the
lore.
Vault series.
It has to be a lore. There's no way. This is definitely
know,
better
man.
Than lore, I think.
Maybe it's because I was never a huge fan of, like, flip cards are cool. I think conceptually it's awesome. But in general and for value, like, I just don't know if this From the Vault lore is going to have tons and tons of upside. That said, the fact that I keep hearing people struggling to get an MSRP and I see places sold out, I'm pretty sure Card Kingdom was sold. They were sold out. I don't know if they're sold out as of today, but they were sold out. There's clearly like a little bit more interest than I had expected for this. So, I think it's worth watching. Iconic Masters, my take on the whole Iconic Masters thing is I actually think that these cards are going to surprise people. I think that they will stabilize and begin to rebound, as most Master sets do. I know that this was printed into Oblivion, apparently, and I know the big box stores have it and whatnot. And that kind of ties into something we'll get into, a broader topic we'll get into later, Chaz. But I think that I think you don't buy it. You definitely don't buy Iconic Masters immediately. But I think like through December and into the holidays, I think the Iconic Masters is going to be worthless.
I think you're gonna, I think you're gonna be able to pick up some really good deals, though. If anything,
yeah,
it's just for play value. I just don't know. I mean, from Now, there are a few of us out there that are saying, no, you know, there's not as much as we think. It does seem like a lot, but there's just not as much. Just, you know, retailers are just trying to get rid of this thing because it's just not a good set. And, you know, that could be true. There's not that many high caliber, you know, cards in the set. I mean, you have a couple good ones, but overall, I could probably agree that, you know, on the overall, it's not as great, but it just still seems to me that there's a lot out there. And, but on the plus side is that you'll be able to pick up some really great deals, through the holidays, because, you know, stores are just throwing boxes at you.
Oh yeah. And I mean, any playable, any singles you want from the set are going to be just, you're gonna be able to get them at bargain basement deals, over the holidays. So I would be looking at Iconic Masters through the holidays and into, like, you know, the new year, as far as like pickups, and it's just going to be dirt cheap. I also look, I don't think it's tough. I don't think long term it's going to be horrible. As you said, the biggest problem is that it's just not a very good set. But, you know, it really depends on the supply. If it's this conspiracy situation where it's like it's came and went, nobody cares, and there's so much of it lying around, then yeah, we might have a problem. But I mean, these are like, I mean, it does have playables in it. It's not like these cards are just.
No, it definitely does.
You know? So I would not be so quick to dismiss Iconic Masters. I know it's right now it's just horrible, but I would keep an eye on it, and I would start picking things up when they get really low through the holidays. I would actually be picking up, especially if you need the cards. But beyond that, for investing, I wouldn't have zero problem picking up some things and stashing them away. That said, I am in the very, I think it's quite a small minority of people that really like unstable, particularly at like the $85 to $90 box price point. I think that's a perfectly fine buy. My thesis on this extends to the fact that, like, tabletop gaming, like that sort of like casual, and I said this before in other places, but that kind of casual game environment, if you take something like these card games like Exploding Kittens and just like Cards Against Humanity, like I think that is blown up, particularly in like the past 5 years or so, that kind of game. So I think that Unstable is really well positioned right now, and I think it could very easily become very popular. And I also don't think the print run is as large as people think. I know Marrow is public and talking about, oh, it's a smaller blah blah blah, and people are saying that, oh well, you know, I think it was Unhinged, they overprinted it to the ground and too much and blah blah blah. I actually don't know. I don't think Wizards is as scared of the Unhinged phenomena as the public is liking to make it seem. That said, I don't think that they overprinted this release. So I think $85 to $90 boxes are great. I easily see this set being $150 sealed box. Now, how soon that happens, I don't know. But I think
probably
that it's looking
possible. At a quite some time. But the thing with the Masters or these unsets, and you kind of hit on it a little bit, Tark, is it's not the fact, I don't think they printed a ton of it, but it's still the fact that no one opens it, right? Now, this is just speaking from me. I don't know how many folks out there are going to draft this multiple times, but from my experience over the years playing this and having played in Unhinged, it felt like it was a one and done kind of thing, that people tried it out, they had their fun, and then pretty much never touched the product again. Now, I do have a piece coming to the free side of the site tomorrow, just kind of going over Unstable and my thoughts, kind of unwrapping it all, you know, pun. But to me, it felt like this was as close to a real set as you can get with a joke set, if that makes sense. It definitely didn't strike me as the previous unsets where it was almost kind of too out there, and then folks pretty much like couldn't even play it, and the gameplay was a little bizarre. This actually seemed like it was a put together, like a well put together set that just happened to be a joke set and not the other way around. So, I mean, there were some really, like, there are definitely some cards that with maybe one tweak could have been a black border card, and a couple of which could definitely pass as a black border card, and maybe isn't, you know, introduced as, you know, viable commanders. Maybe some of them get adopted, I don't know, but there's definitely, you know, maybe one or two of them that could easily get adopted as a black border card, because it's right there.
Oh yeah, I mean, like some of these squirrel cards and some of these like
even like Storm. you know Crow Storm, like that, like other unsets didn't have just generic like almost black border cards like that. Very little, if not.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And again, like I said, for me too, it's like if you wanted to go play a jokey, fun, super crazy, casual ungame, you could not go out and buy a box of the previous two unsets because A, right, they're hard to find, and B, they're so expensive. Now people can just buy a $100 box of an and just play it with their friends and have a party night. Like I think this set's going to surprise people, and I actually don't totally agree with you, Chaz. I think we're going to see $150 boxes sooner than later. I don't think it's going to be I don't think it's going to be in 6 months, but I would not be surprised if in
wait 3 years. 18,
I would say honestly, I would say even 18 to 24 months, you could see $150 boxes. Again, depends on the. Yes, listen, I don't want people to come back and say, oh, you know, if all of a sudden they open the pipes and there's this second wave of just like millions of boxes, of course, well, then it's not going to happen. But assuming the print run isn't monstrously high, and I don't believe it is, I have no evidence to support that, but I don't think it is. Well, the evidence is that I saw Card Kingdom sell out of their pre-sales immediately, which was interesting.
Yeah. And I believe Mario said something on Tumblr where they said, you know, this is not going to be like a super.
Right.
You know, release into the wilds kind of thing. They're kind of having their one little, they're kind of having their like one wave, and that's like pretty much it.
Right, exactly. So, and I mean, listen, the full arts are there. That's going to drive a ton of the value, obviously. Yeah. So I think $150 boxes are not out of the realm of the possibility in the short term. So I like, out of all these new releases, I like Unstable the most, which might sound surprising, but I do. I think it's interesting. I don't know anything about Explorers of Ixalan. I don't know how real there's cards in that, right?
Yeah, there's some stuff, but I mean we've had, you know, some of our other writers cover that, and you know it's fine if, again, like you said, if you want to buy a product and enjoy with your friends, it's a pretty good buy. There's enough value in there to almost make up the cost, but overall, I mean I don't really think we touch anything in there either.
And these like mysterious planeswalker decks, I think they showed up in big box stores. Do you know about that? Those things?
Yeah, I did not see them yet, but yeah.
Right? Huh? Those are worth, when I say worthless, I mean they're like not worth looking at. Like they don't have anything interesting in them, right?
I think it's just kind of like a repack of like
repack, right?
Junk.
Right, okay.
Yeah. Of like leftover planeswalker decks and stuff, and they give you a die. So, yeah, I mean, some interesting stuff. All right. So, I mean, I'm kind of lukewarm on Unstable, but I can definitely see the upside. You're definitely a little bit more optimistic. So I think that's a pretty good place to be.
Yeah. And as far as Rivals, I mean, you know, that's coming. It'll be, mid-January. So, you know, we'll obviously be getting into spoiler season soon, and we'll be diving into that. So I think you and our new writer Rob San Juan are going to be like, you know, taking a look at the previews and
definitely going through whatnot, and it's so. Always it's, you know, the way the market kind of is now and the way they kind of structured this now is that well, the good thing for us is that release time is usually a pretty busy time, so that should be something to look forward to at the very least.
Yeah,
because it's been as crazy as it sounds with everything kind of releasing all at once, it's been pretty quiet.
It has.
Yeah, it's definitely going through like a, you know, it's definitely sluggish. We kind of hit that lag like going into the summer, and then it's definitely continuing, and it doesn't make a lot of sense because there's been a lot of releases. But, you know, we have Rivals around the corner, and then around the corner from that, we have another Master set. So it's like going to start picking up midway through the year.
Then we have Dominaria, which I think is going to be
crazy,
massively successful.
Crazy.
However, and I don't want to be a buzzkill, but I am very, very cautiously optimistic. I'm actually treading on the side. I'm erring on the side of caution with Dominaria because, I guess unfortunately they've developed this track record of building massive hype around something and then having it be kind of like a letdown. And I'm just concerned, like Dominaria to me, when you say Dominaria, I the first thing place I go to is like Urza Block. That's where I start. And then I go into like Nemesis Masks and all that. And I'm just afraid that it's going to be like filled with like Torment, like, you know, Invasion, like kind of like random stuff that are less interesting. I think when everybody thinks of Dominaria, they kind of, I personally think that they go to Urza Block. That's where their brain usually goes. So I don't know.
Yeah, and like Stronghold, Tempest, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But we'll see. I don't know. There's been absolutely nothing on that. And the fact that Richard Garfield is on it, that makes me super stoked. But, you know, I worry that, you know, that has, and it's kind of like, I kind of like how Iconic Masters, like, that has the opportunity to be insanely awesome or a complete letdown, you know? So,
yeah.
Speaking of complete letdown, we had some interesting comments from actually someone we just recently had a vendor series on. And Chaz, I figured we could kind of like sort of form this cast around that and chat about it.
Yeah. We recorded a vendor series with Angelo from Magic.Cards. The last chunk of it got, you know, the last like maybe 15 minutes or so kind of got lost from, you know, technical difficulties. And Angelo and I have been, you know, been trying to reschedule and do that and get it up. I mean, I'll probably just post what I have and then maybe, you know, we just have another quick one because... turns out Angelo is not too optimistic about the future of, well, not only his own business, but just Magic in general, and has been, you know, in the market, like actually in the market to sell his assets. And, you know, it's definitely sparked a lot of discussion, as, you know, something like this would normally do, when you have a vendor on and then suddenly, you know, they want to sell everything. And, you know, it's honestly led to a lot of great discussions, I thought, you know, and you're going to have a little back and forth of, you know, listen, Angelo has been in the game for quite some time. No, he's not like a card, you know, they're not like a Card Kingdom or Star City Games, but they've been a vendor for quite some time. And, you know, you can always have these discussions of, well, you know, it's just one vendor and, you know, this, that, and the other thing. But to me, I'm actually kind of glad and other folks should really walk away as a learning experience that Angelo kind of divulged everything in the Insider Discord that, you know, this is actually really good information, whether you agree with selling or not, kind of having the thought process and the overall process in general of selling, not only selling your assets, but really why, is definitely something to note and to learn from. So I'm actually really happy.
Yeah.
We had this discussion internally.
Yeah. So if you go to, it started, so just briefly, so it started with Angelo posting a very like somewhat cryptic, like these cryptic messages. I say cryptic, but they weren't, I guess they weren't very cryptic. They were pretty noisy, but
we thought they were some late night.
Yeah. So it was like 2 a.m. over the weekend. And in the spoilers channel, these messages pop up from Atheros, I remember when I saw it, but Atheros is Angelo's account. And he's kind of like, in fact, I'm just going to say it real quick. So he says, and I quote here, out of nowhere, Iconic Masters is the beginning of the end, RIP MTG. Seriously, you would literally be safer investing in Bitcoin. The market is over, gentlemen. GTFO and do something useful with your life. AI will destroy you in the next 36 months. That was kind of odd. I called the death of MTGO, and I have to say, based on the factors, the retailers can't sell Iconic at retail. That equals they're going to gut the secondary and then go for digital. Sorry, 24 years in and I can say we're actually done. Now, when I first read this, I was like, I mean, this comment about AI will destroy the next, I was wondering, and this is interesting because
I thought somebody had too much turkey. Like,
I did.
Seriously, I thought someone was in like a post Thanksgiving like comatose, you know, state and delirious.
To preface this quickly, Angelo, absolutely love you. Have the utmost respect for you. Just commenting that the message just kind of came out of left field. And the more interesting thing was this came on the back of an email I received from him. I was discussing some stuff with Magic.Cards with him, and he sends me this email, and it's at the end of the email says, "MTG is broken. Sorry, bud. Game over." And I was like, I didn't know what that was referencing, and then I read this. So. In any case,
like am I getting my buy list or?
Yeah, exactly.
Uh-oh.
Exactly. So, and he goes on to state that he thinks the market's going to crash extremely hard. And, you know, obviously people probed and were like, hey, are you good? Or is this like, and he was like, listen, I'm not drunk. I just, so this apparently, and I only say this because I do respect. So if any random insider that I wasn't really familiar with had posted this, I would just say, hey, go to General. But the fact that a retailer, I really noticed this because I have so much respect for Angelo and his perspective. And so when I saw this and he says that he's serious, that he was totally sober, it actually made me pause and go, huh, like, what's going on here? You know, when a merchant, especially someone we just had on, I think it was like a month ago, is making these comments, I'm like, okay, like maybe we should really listen to this. So, and I won't rehash everything, but if you go to the General Finance channel, which is, you know, where we kind of hang out and talk just finance in general, he's kind of lists, you know, his reasons. And the one thing I just want to go through the reasoning he gave. He kind of outlined his reasoning up here. And we can just take a look at that real fast. Hold on, let me pull it up. And then we can kind of go into his point, because I want to kind of address his points, because I think they're interesting. Where are they? Hold on. Okay, here we go. One second, guys. okay. So, all right. Okay. Sorry. One second, guys. All right. Here we go. So he says, here's some of the indicators that I'm going to call out. So he goes, Iconic Masters, massively overprinted, but supply not controlled. Mass market has it, which means it's about selling as many cards as possible, as fast as possible, without regard to the secondary market. I think that's true. That seems to make sense. I don't know about his supply not controlled. However, deeper down in the channel, he apparently has provided evidence from like distributors about how much they have in stock. He's actually, I think he's shown some inventory numbers, interestingly enough. So it seems like there definitely is plenty of Iconic Masters, and it's in big box stores. Again, he doesn't have any concrete numbers, but apparently he shows some distributor counts and pricing. So it's about selling as many cards as possible as fast. Yeah, I mean, I think all these master sets are intended to sell packs, right? Like, I don't know.
Right.
I don't know that, I'm not sure that that's anything we should be surprised at. I think what he's trying to say here is that there's like, is that they're just, he seems to think that they're taking hits at the secondary market as cash grabs. I don't think that's been I think that's been the way it's been since after the first Modern Masters. I think they went, oh wait, we can totally make cash grabs here. So I think that's been their perspective all along. I don't know if this is necessarily an immediate shift due to some issue with the game or the player base. All right, then he goes two. Commander 2017, same deal, same thing, but they had better control over the first wave. The rest is just sitting. You can have as much as you want of that now for nothing. I can't speak on that, to be completely honest. I don't know what the supply is like, and I don't know what the pricing is like. Chaz, do you have any idea on Commander 2017?
From what I remember, you know, it was more recently that another like really big wave came out, but you know, some were reporting that it's just basically there if you want it. Like, it's literally just like sitting there, and right, folks can order a ton of it.
So these two points sound like print issues. Was my first thought. I don't know if it necessarily means that. So it sounds like what he's saying is like, okay, they overprinted this stuff, and he's basically stating that the demand is not, like, their projections on the demand are not being met. So they're over. So what they think is going to sell is not happening, right? So then, which means that the player base is not there to support the amount that's coming out, right? Third point, he said, a while ago, most of us figured out that sealed product was always a good safe investment. If you bought pallets of boosters, you printed money. Who wants to call when that ended? Right around RTR, it became a categorically bad investment. Yeah, but again, so I don't know what that, I mean, that just means that the demand level at that point in time had gone up, and they were just printing to demand and then some, right? Like, obviously we know that they overprint cents these days, but again, this is nothing that sort of is surprising to me, right? Like, sealed product has not been a safe investment since RTR, as he states, but I don't even know if that's a bad thing, to be honest with you. Like, just because there's more than enough sealed product to go around, I don't know that that indicates that there's a problem with the game inherently, the player base. Okay. Fourth point, this is quite interesting. Turn rates is basically like when you buy and selling card, right? So when retailers take an ingest inventory and then sell it, the turn rate. Turn rates on basically everything that's not reserve list is awful. We've lost a lot of players and buyers. There is more purchasing happening by diehards and speculators than growing player base. Standard is in a horrible slump. So, okay. That one's tough to, it's tough to like validate that because we don't know anything about the
really
players.
Is.
Now the problem is, here's the problem with this statement is that Angelo says this after every other vendor we've had on say nothing but optimistic things about the game. Now I get it. All these vendors have vested interest in the game. So that may create somewhat of a bias. Totally understand that. However, I really don't think like, we've had Card Kingdom tell us that 2000 and I think it was 15 last year, Card Kingdom told us that 2015 was a soft year for them. So we've had like, we have a track record of vendors being fairly,
they're very, fairly transparent. I mean, everyone that we've talked, I mean, even Channel Fireball has talked about their, when we had Channel Fireball on, and definitely Card Kingdom. I mean, a lot of the bigger vendors are everyone has been forthcoming when they, you know, when they've had down years, I mean, and they've had down quarters. So, I mean, I even mentioned this very, very briefly on Twitter in a, you know, in kind of a discussion that unless they're straight up lying, I mean, we can only take them for their word.
Right. Exactly.
And I don't know, why would they lie about attendance being like down? That like doesn't help them.
Right. Exactly. Now he says, there is more purchasing happening by diehards and speculators. This is really interesting because I actually think that that's a good thing. Now, obviously, if it's okay, if players, if just the casual players aren't buying cards, that's bad. You can't have just speculators and like hardcore players.
I don't think that's definitely not happening. There's
I don't
no
think that's.
Way.
I definitely don't. However, I think There's that not. The in I think that the increase. So back several years ago. Brian Dale, who's Jay Temkin in our group here, he did an interview with me for this website called Perfect Storm MTG, which used to exist. I don't know if it does anymore. But you can still find the article, I think, if you look it up. But anyways,
it was well done.
Yeah. So, and in there, I said that, you know, the finance speculation community is really fascinating because it's becoming its own demand segment. Right. And I think that that is a good thing. And I was like, in the article, I mentioned that, you know, I was interested to see where how this demand segment grew and where it went. You know, I want to see where it was in the future. And here we are now, and it's actually affecting the marketplace. I think that's good. There's this whole new world of demand, which is the speculation demand, where people are. It doesn't matter if they're going back and forth amongst each other. It's another demand segment, right? I think that is healthy and that is good. I don't think there's anything wrong with an increase in speculators coming in. Now, of course,
and you know who echoed those sentiments? Larger vendors.
Yeah, exactly. If you are the more people that are engaged in the MTG economy, the better, right? Now, yes, at the foundation of it all, organic like utility and organic play demand is going to be the driver for most of these things. But guess what? Speculation, like Chaz, you and I, the value of a card is what. The value of the card is based on what we kind of like. There's a quote unquote brand value, and I say brand value, like I'm trying to pull in concepts from like the kind of marketing corporate world. But like brand value means that regardless of what the inherent value of a thing is, if it has brand value, which means if you and I find value in it as a brand, that is value. If you and I look at a useless card, but we love the art, or we love the history, or we love something about it, and we ascribe value to it, it has value. So if you and I are trading back and forth, it doesn't matter if nobody plays. It's the same thing with reserve list. I mean, yes, there's a supply. I get it. There's a whole supply like equation in there that factors in totally. But regardless, let's say Siege Rhino. Let's say I just bought up. And yeah, I'm using this as a random example. But let's say I just bought up millions and millions of Siege Rhinos because I just wanted them because I just love Siege Rhinos. I could effectively that's a nothing card. Costs what, a dime to buy? That's a nothing card. But I could create value there. Like you can create value here. So the more we have speculators coming in and kind of creating their own value, there's nothing wrong with that. They're actually adding a new kind of value component to the game. It's sort of like, okay, it's what trading used to be, right? Like I can trade you something just because I wanted it. Maybe I played with it, maybe I didn't. So this argument that speculators, and this goes, this is a broader argument and just speculation in general in the finance community. Like, there's nothing, like, they're actually in many ways healthy and important to the game.
It's been, I mean, it's been a part of the Magic economy, like, since almost day one. I mean, it literally, what you traded backpacks for is a computer screen. I mean, they're doing the exact same thing that I've been accustomed to since I started playing the game.
Yep.
I mean, it's literally no different than, you know, I mean, yeah, you still see some of the larger names at the GPs and stuff, the ogres of the world, those folks, but largely the people that were traveling around locally in your Tri-County area when there weren't, you know, when GPs weren't, you know, weren't what they were today. And when there wasn't this robust, you know, online economy and like TCG player and all that stuff, you know, we were filling that demand.
Exactly.
So nothing's changed other than the folks that were doing that before are now just sitting behind computer screen.
Exactly. Now, so
you still hear you. I mean, when a lot of this was still blossoming, and like the internet and everything was like kind of moving towards digital, and you know there were more content sites and all that. I mean, you still hear of the local stories of like, you know, we had those stories of like people buying up mythics of, you know, RTR and all that stuff like locally, and it just never panned out. I mean, we remember stories on Reddit about that. Nothing's changed.
Right. So he made that point that he goes, okay, his next point. I think that WotC is going to pound on paper reprint super hard mercilessly, like end of Yu-Gi-Oh days, and then exit for digital.
No.
Okay, that I completely disagree with. Completely. No. So here's the deal. So okay, I've been spending time in Asia. So in Asia, gaming in general is massive. Okay. Card games, massive. All right. You're talking about the first and arguably best card game TCG ever that's been made. There was the first one, and it's arguably the best one. Okay. There is no way when an entire industry exists of like hundreds, I'm sure hundreds of card games, that suddenly Magic is just going to just leave the paper world. Like, there's no way. There's no way
that's doing what they're doing is nothing different than what other TCGs that have a legitimate digital presence. I mean, you literally look at the Pokemon TCG that's had their digital platform for years now, and that's what they're doing to pivot. They saw that there's still success in having a paper aspect of the game that they're not going to kill. And they saw that digital is a much more lucrative, prospect that they were not taking full advantage of. I mean, let's just call it what it is. Their online presence was subpar, mediocre at best. And they saw that, you know, other card games were utilizing this to their full, their full potential. Pokemon's been doing it for a long time, having, you know, paper and digital. And obviously you had Hearthstone, which got wildly popular just from digital. So, I mean, you just look at Pokemon. I mean, people are still playing Pokemon. And if you look at the comparative prices, I mean, it's starting to get there. I mean, right now, and this is still a fairly cheap standard, I'll bet, you know, kind of, boring and not very exciting. A lot of people don't like it. But we've had an even cheaper standard before this. But if you line up Pokemon, like the actual paper aspect and Magic now, it's pretty damn similar in terms of getting into and playing standard. They're around 200 average for a deck, and that's probably where they wanted to be. And they were not at that point for a very long time. I mean, we go back to a few previous standards before that. They were, you know, clocking in at like $400-$500 for a standard deck. So they're not doing anything different to my view that other card games aren't doing. They're pushing out the product. They're having multiple products getting released. I mean, you look at Pokemon, there's like a new product coming out every other like week.
Yep. Now let's assume now, and I totally agree with you. I staunchly disagree that paper's going anywhere. But
no, it's not.
Let's extrapolate this and imagine a world where WotC did just that. Let's say they went, hey guys, we're done with paper. The paper market is still going to exist. There is years and years and years worth of sealed product. There is like there isn't, it's too late. So the interesting thing is, I think this goes to a bigger point. Like, there's a statement too big to fail, right? And it's a really kind of corny statement that's applied to giant corporations.
Real now, quick.
I don't think WotC is too big to fail. I think Magic is quote unquote too big to fail. That Magic is its own, it's essentially its own entity at this point. It will never go away. WotC could burn to the ground, everybody be annihilated, and the Magic community and the gaming player base will keep, we've talked about this before, Chaz, the game itself is too good. I mean, it is now part of the, it is part of the gaming, of gaming history.
Culture. Yeah,
it's culture. It will never go away. WotC could stop printing cards tomorrow, and Magic tournaments will continue. Star City Games can continue to host tournaments independently. Trust me, in Asia, it's so big. There's so many ways that the game will. People could print cards now. WotC could probably do some kind of IP thing, whatever. But like, there's no way the paper market's going anywhere. Magic is too big. So I mean, yeah, he says that they're gonna like. In order for WotC to, you would have to have a couple of things happen. You would have to have a complete global paradigm shift to people just not wanting to sit down and do tabletop games. That's not happening. Tabletop gaming across the board is up, way up, and continues to just like it's spiking. I mean, interest in tabletop games. So people like to sit down in front of each other and play.
My last discussion about that very topic with a store owner, local store owner, told me, you know, it used to be what game is coming out, like what board games are coming out in the next 6 months. Nowadays it's which board games are coming out like this, which five board games are coming out like this week.
Yeah, I think Avram was saying something similar.
Actually it was. Yeah. But yeah, someone locally echoed some very similar sentiments.
So I don't agree with that statement. Yeah, but again, let's say Magic died. Like, the game would still continue. So it would take a massive paradigm shift to people not wanting to sit down in front of each other. Then it would have to take a massive paradigm shift people not wanting to play paper Magic anymore. And I totally agree that the next generation is a digital generation. I don't agree that they're going to abandon the tabletop experience. And as long as the tabletop experience is still around, then Magic is still going to exist in paper form. And even if WotC completely abandoned the paper world, it would still exist in the secondary market. So I don't think it's sort of extreme as he's presenting it here. And I don't think now what I will say is this. I think that it's very possible, and I trust his, I mean, he's a merchant, he deals, this is his business. I trust him when he says that he thinks that we might be headed toward a downswing, right? That we might be heading towards a slump in the marketplace. I could totally see that happening. Could prices continue to go down? Reprints are just gonna pound. I can foresee that. And I could see prices, like, listen, I could foresee Magic cards at a certain time. I don't think it's in the near term, but at a certain point, it's hard for a magic card, like a standard card, to hit $20. I mean, hell, we're almost there now, right? Yeah. Or it's hard for a modern post-standard rotated Magic card to stay $20, right? I could totally see that.
Maybe have one in a set, like, and that's right.
But I don't,
and definitely has to be a mythic.
Right. I just don't foresee. I don't foresee it going anywhere. Disappearing. Like, it can't. It's too big at this point.
One of our writers, Pete Casella, wrote a very, actually wrote about a doomsday scenario where Magic doesn't exist, and pretty much laid out everything that you just talked about. It was a really good article. If anyone wants to go and read that, it was published about a week or two ago. Very insightful.
Yeah. Honestly, the questions that I'm asking are less. You know, again, I think Angelo's taking a bit of an extreme viewpoint. I think the more important questions are, okay, what does a slump period look like? What happens when Magic cards are, when it's hard to get to $10 in a Magic card, right?
It's in a slump because there's, again, another shift in their release schedule. And we're on the cusp. I mean, we're pretty much about to enter, like, the period of time where a Magic Arena drops and everything that entails. So I do think it's kind of going to be dropping off a little bit until, you know, everything is suddenly reinvigorated. I think people are just kind of, they're tired of the, you know, kind of the standard that it is right now, and everything that's happened in the past, you know, we're feeling the repercussions of what happened. I mean, yeah, they salvaged it to some degree, but there was still a lot of fallout from what happened. And their, you know, their design philosophy, and now they're changing it again. You have one set block, so there's a lot of things going on. I mean, modern, the way it is now, it's a great format, but they don't push it enough. I mean, they have, you know, we finally have our first like modern tournament. What, like 2 years, 3 years, maybe like 2 years, something like that. Yeah, the Pro Tour, rather Pro Tour. So you know that will probably garner some interest again, but. You know, and then everything, you know, all these products just kind of came out at one time. Not that I kind of blame them for flooding the market around a holiday time, but it was just a lot at once. And I understand that. I personally don't think it was a lot, but I can see when folks are just kind of, you know, too much of a good thing is not a good thing, right? You know, we just had too much magic at once.
Yeah, and listen, look, perhaps that remains their supplemental ancillary release philosophy doesn't change. Maybe they want to just pound the market. This could be true. I still don't, that's to me, in my opinion, that's not going to do anything to the secondary market, except, yeah, prices might go down. But what I'm saying is that it's not going to remove the secondary market.
No, it's not.
They're just injecting more.
Yeah, it's going to turn into exactly what we've been talking about for like the past 6 months to a year, where it's a turn and burn thing. I mean, you have your spikes of interest during release period times, during like, you know, reprints when stuff is pretty much dirt cheap and has nowhere to go but up. And it's just a different market. It's a different landscape. I mean, think about this. I mean, think about, you can't have a disparity of, you're going to be really, think about this. I mean, you're going to be releasing Magic Arena. You can't expect people to like, lessen the disparity between playing Magic Arena and then saying, you know, for these same exact players to say, you know what, I just want to go to my Friday Night Magic, or I want to go play Standard, and they have to turn around and spend like $300 or $250 for a Standard deck when they could play a draft on Magic Arena or something like that, or play, you know, construct a Standard deck for like $60, you know, $80.
Yeah,
you know, you can't have, and that's why I mean keep looking at Pokemon. I know it's kind of a weird comparison, but I definitely keep tabs on the prices, because to me, that's the only other card game that has been doing something like this successfully for a little while now. And if you just look at the average cost of their decks, it's like $100. It's like literally like $125 for a Standard deck that can top eight you into a regional championship. I mean, they have to, you know, there can't be a huge gap between when people go sign up for Magic Arena and get their, you know, their fix there and get acquainted with the game there, then turn around and like, dude, what? Like, I'm not paying $250 for a Standard deck. I'll just keep playing Arena. So they're going to keep releasing these, you know, these supplemental products because they know it works. I mean, they know it has some success in other card games.
Yeah,
when you keep the buy-in low, you keep both aspects alive in some respect.
Exactly. So let's go back to this doomsday scenario, right? Let's take a step back. So we've already talked about, okay, what would happen if Magic went away entirely? Well, it would be propped up by the community itself, right? But let's go down the rabbit hole of, oh, okay, Arena is a success. They completely port everything over. Magic Online goes away, and now everything. There's like a free to play / cheap economy. There's ways to trade all of it, right? And everybody's like, well, why would I? So let's say there's this mass exodus from the paper world to the digital world. Okay, that doesn't make the secondary market go away in paper. As a matter of fact, so let me ask you, Chaz, when was the easiest, quote unquote, easiest time to be doing Magic Finance? When would you say?
I'd say right around when Modern Masters 1 came out, like Modern was just starting.
I would actually go back even further than that. I would go around.
Yeah, probably. That's when I kind of got into it. I mean, before that, it was kind of just like this enigma. Like, I mean, I was like 15 years.
Exactly. Old. No, exactly. But so that.
I mean, I think I was like, no, I wasn't really 15. I think I was like a man. How long was this ago now? Maybe a senior in high school. I don't know.
Right. So everybody now talks about, you know, everybody in the finance was like, oh, it's not like it used to be. It's the easy money is gone. If you suddenly have everybody abandon or not everybody, if you had this huge mass amount of exodus of people to abandon paper, including finance, everybody just gets out of it. That just makes it easier. That goes back to the 2010 days when it was easier to do this, right? If everybody leaves and the community of people that are doing this is shrinks again, right? It just becomes easier money. So like, in my opinion, there's no way to stop. If you ask me, the best thing to keep prices normalized is this thriving and growing speculator base, because it means that products being open, people are competing for prices, which keeps the price down, right? The more people that leave that, the easier it is for the few to warp prices, shoot stuff through the roof, right? Like when people were making like ridiculous amounts of money off Magic Finance, it's when nobody was doing it. So if everybody were to leave to go to Arena, right, and finance became this super hyper niche thing again, there would just be people that would just be cleaning house off, because again, the paper market just is not going anywhere. Like, it's not, even if it's all relative, right? Let's say prices suddenly tanked, but demand tanked. That means those that could afford it can buy mass amounts of volume at dirt cheap prices, and that sell at still at a higher price point. Does that make sense? So like, if current demand is $5 for a card, everybody leaves and demand drops to $1. Well, I will then buy those cards at bulk and sell them for $1. I'm still making right? Like, the margins are still there. So it's like this sort of idea that it goes back to this notion that one, paper is not going to around, and it is. The cards, you can't burn every single Magic card in existence. As long as the paper market exists, there's going to be a secondary market with or without the, whether that's a small pool or a large, right? Yeah. And that's just kind of a way to, again, I'm not saying prices won't crash or prices won't go down, but they won't disappear. You're not going to, the cards won't be worthless because it's a game. That's the big difference.
Man, Modern Masters came out in
2013.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a while ago, man.
Yeah. So I wasn't really a freshman. I was more of like a, you know, midway through college. Yeah, that was probably the best time. That was probably the best time.
I think it was around Innistrad. I think that's when
Innistrad.
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Leading up to that too. Yeah, it was nuts. I mean, like I said, it was the beginning of Modern. Everything was literally going crazy.
And the only reason I think
prices
that is
left and right were just skyrocketing.
My buddy who has an LGS would back, because I played in Innistrad at his LGS, and he was just like, man, the money in Magic is dumb. He's like, it is so dumb how much money is. And that was around Innistrad. So, and honestly, it's still dumb, quote unquote dumb. Like, the amount of money, people have no idea how much money. You have Channel Fireball that's completely taken over the Grand Prix circuit. I mean, the amount of money that is in Magic is staggering. And that's what I'm saying. It's the game is quote unquote too big to fail, right? The game is just, it is in gaming culture. It's just not going anywhere. And this goes into broader things like the reserve, like these power nine and all this stuff. You know, it's just going to go up in value. Like, Magic started at the first generation of modern gaming. It is part of gaming history. You can't get rid of it. You just can't. Like, wizards could completely implode and we'd still be around. Chaz and I would still be doing finance podcasts. So, well, maybe we take a break.
Switch it to Pokemon.
We take a break for a little bit. Yeah, we do trading card finance podcasts.
Yes. If it's up to Tark.
Sorry, did I miss something here?
We were gonna. So Jeremy, we need to have Jeremy on as a guest, but he wants to refute that one point that you made. But he is in chat.
Oh, sorry. Hold on. I could refute. Can I refute which point? Which point?
Probably your whole point. No, I'm just kidding.
What the
Magic collapsing?
Can you refute the point of so the question? So you have a counterpoint. So your argument is that Magic can completely collapse and just die entirely.
Well, I'll just let him talk for himself. Yo, come on! Don't be shy now, Jeremy. Don't be shy.
All right. Well, we'll
we'll have you on. Okay. Yeah, I gave you a chance. You'll be on the podcast. You'll be on the very next podcast. So keep everything fresh. And we can talk about it on the next one. But
DM me, Jeremy. We can talk. Oh, he was plugging his mic.
Okay. Well, okay. Next week. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
I mean, those are. I think it's, like I said, overall, I think it was a really good thing that it happened internally. We are kind of getting towards that time, Tark. So let's just kind of wrap things up quickly enough. So you know, let's talk about some cards that we wanted to look at this week.
Hang on, let me go to
I'll just rattle mine off real quickly. Okay. I talked about this in the Insider Discord about a week or so ago. I saw it pop up on one of the interests, and it's been fairly quiet. It hasn't exploded. It was like a pretty small percentage, but it was enough for me to not wait because it's a pretty powerful card. And that card is Temporal Aperture. It is a reserveless card. I didn't even think it was a reserveless card. It's always been a card that I liked. Really powerful ability. I don't think it's banned. So it is from Saga. Can't remember. Think it's Saga. The Gears. I can't remember. Might be Saga. Yeah, Saga. Really powerful artifact. And they have been drying up quietly ever since then. Under $3. So they've been trending a little bit, and I did not wait. As soon as I saw that card kind of pop up and remind me like of this card, I was like, you know what? I'll just grab a couple play sets of this and just stash them away. I'm not going to wait because it's just too powerful of a card to just let it go. And the other card I wanted to talk about I talked about this a while ago. I just wanted to note here, this is not a card that like I'm choosing again, but Karlov. Has slowly started to increase, and I might that could be because it has a lot more success in 1v1 commander. I don't know, you know, it obviously it's a pretty good just normal commander, but it's seeing a lot more success in 1v1 commander in wake of all the, you know, bannings a while back. But so those were the two cards that I want to talk about, and the last one was, man, I forgot. I'll find it in my notes real quick. You go ahead, Tark. Okay.
So I have my two reserve list picks for this week. First one's going to be Vesuvan Doppelganger. If we're looking at interest, it's going down, which is great. Anytime reserve list cards are dropping, it's a nice time to pick them up when you can get them low. Looks like you can get it for like around $8 or so. I would definitely be picking up near mint copies of that. That's super fun in cubes and casual circles. There's this kind of weird alliances reserveless card called Varchild's War Riders, which has a cumulative upkeep clause. And I, you know, as we saw with other cumulative upkeep cards, when they sort of adjusted that ruling, this one has seen an uptick, still only like $2. So I like that one. And then there was a foil, Starfield of Nyx that we had talked about.
Oh no, yes. That was mine.
Oh, that was yours?
Yeah. Oh, okay. And Mesa Enchantress.
Right. Oh, yes. It was like a combo. Yes, that was yours. Mine was the, where is it? The Saviors of Kamigawa card.
Trying to
sorry.
Sneak,
yours
trying
yours to... was, we talked about it, but you brought it up.
Yeah,
and I didn't,
Yeah.
Got it. Hold on.
Snake in the grass.
I think it was Ayumi. Yeah. My other one was a foil called, it's Ayumi the Last Visitor. It's only about $4. Really, really, really kind of weird. So it's a legendary creature. It's a spirit, so people can mess around with it in spirit decks. It has a legendary landwalk, which is really kind of random. The reason why I like this one is because the likelihood that something like that gets reprinted is very, very low in the near term, if ever. It's just not something that's on their radar. Legendary landwalk is something that's not super relevant these days. And this is a spirit. It's got a weird name, and it's from Saviors, so I would not anticipate this one getting reprinted. And it's a very, very cheap foil. It's like $4. So yeah.
I was gonna write an article after the Unstable set, so I will reiterate this again because I like, you know, I think it's kind of that time you going back and look at some of these older foils too, even if they're kind of from more recent sets. And I actually, you know, noted this. This wasn't just right now, but I mean, when it popped up it in the Insider Discord, it made me go back and look because I know someone who posted in the sale reporting channel talked about Sidisi Brood Tyrant foils, and that someone, you know, they sold 4 in one shot just randomly. So that made me go back and look. I mean, I really like that. And when I looked back through that, you have, you know, very similar commanders in foil that are, you know, fairly top commanders. I mean, Sidisi Brood Tyrant's up there in terms of all-time favorite commanders. You got Omnath, Locus of Rage. You know, foils are pretty cheap. I mean, I think they're under like $5. And what was the other one? You know, Brago, but it got reprinted. You got Narset and Light Master. So I think it was a pretty good time to kind of go back and look through some of the foil commanders that, you know, are fairly popular, and their foils are the kind of the spread there is pretty low. I liked Omnath Locus of Rage a lot because, I mean, it just kind of popped up right in front of me.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yep. So again, yeah, just to make it easier on Guillaume, I was just mentioning Karlov. That was not, you know, me choosing it again. But yeah, I liked Starfield of Nyx. Was just a really interesting card, especially when it came out. And foils were always fairly expensive, but they certainly cooled off, you know, in the years after Magic Origins. And it is a mythic in Magic Origins. So yeah.
No, I like that one. I think that's a good one.
Yeah.
I think this is like $7, you know, right now for the foil. I'm not super bullish on it, but I think it's got
that
it's
one actually came up in market foil, so that definitely seems like more of a real market value. Just really quickly, I mean, MTG Stocks updated its reporting. So now you have regular foil, market, and market foil. It makes things much easier. So if you haven't checked out MTG Stocks, I think they updated about a week ago. Much easier to kind of see what's really happening, and not just you know, seeing manipulation and you know, some things can definitely be off when you only have one kind of tracking.
It's great because there are fewer cards on it, which gives you a much more realistic picture of what's actually happening to these cards. And the percentage gain, you know, they're not massive spikes, right? You're seeing most of them are like 8% or less, right? Which makes sense, right? These are like the market price, which means like the organic price, the real true demand price that people are paying for these things is not as crazy as the daily stocks can sometimes indicate.
I also looked at Xenagos the Reveler foils and Tamiyo Field Researcher foils. Apparently these are much more popular in normal like commander than even I thought. And there's still a pretty good you know, multiplier there. I mean, normal copies for each of these cards is around $5, and their foils are at like, you know, $10 to $12 respectively for each of them. So I would definitely keep an eye on both of those as well. Tamiyo from Shadows or from Eldritch Moon. So I think that's a pretty good one.
So I'm looking here. So Cryptic Command is still $19. Like, that's if you're crazy. If you're going to make the argument that's to me crazy. Icons is a complete and utter disaster, I would want to be seeing $8 to $10 Cryptic Commands. That's just not happening, right? Like, when I still see $20 Cryptic Commands, I can't believe that Iconic Masters is just an utterly worthless and a disaster of a set. I'm not saying it's good, but I mean, you know, I mean, listen, if you show me a $10 price for Cryptic Command, then I will be like, yeah, it was a pretty bad set. But I mean, we're still looking at $20 for a Cryptic Command.
Yep.
So.
All right, Tark, I think that about wraps it up for this week. Oh, really quickly, sorry, we had a couple questions, not just Jeremy, you know, trying to muscle his way.
Yeah.
You know, thinking he owns the place here, but really quickly, so I did not want to gloss over G Tutor. What are your guys' thoughts on the other flip enchantment that was spoiled from Rivals? My friend thinks there's a mana sink in the next set that will increase a lot with the growing rights. He also thinks Tezzeret from Aether Revolt is a good target because of the flip enchantment that was spoiled. So it's Revel in Riches or something like. No, it's not Revel in Riches. It's like something. Oh my god. Like
I honestly break haven't
the vaults the or something like that. Oh my god. Hold on. Let me get this no thing worries. Up. 2 seconds here. We're like definitely going it, over, but it's fine.
I mean, as far as Tezzeret,
Storm the Vault, and it flips into basically Tolarian Academy.
Oh, it's
two blue and a red.
Yeah, I'm not a fan.
When your creatures deal combat damage, you know, you get a treasure.
I'm not a fan.
Definitely is powerful. The problem is I still do think it will run into the growing rights syndrome where on the surface it's powerful, but really there's nothing there. And in terms of Tezzeret, I mean, I think Jeremy hyped it up enough that, like, I don't really think it goes much higher. So, you know, you can thank Cartel on that one. I think they hyped it as much as you could possibly hype that card. So, you know, if Tezzeret was going to do anything at standard, it would have been now.
Yeah, it would have happened by now. Exactly.
It would have happened. I mean, yeah, you can get a couple more cards in Rivals, but I think it, unless it goes back down to like the $4 range, it might be trending back down already. But other than that, I don't really feel like picking them up at like double the price. Like if it goes back down to $4 again, then I would definitely be like, yeah, we should look at this card again.
Yeah, we talked about it. I remember we talked about it at $4. I mean,
yeah,
almost any Planeswalker is $4.
Also, since it's my niche, any standard bulk rares that you guys like? I wonder if the 3/1 with flying and flash that cycles might be a good pickup.
Is Ruin Raider still? Ruin Raider was never bulk, was it?
Ruin Raider's getting there. I mean, it's pretty close. I mean, I think it's like $1, if not, it's probably less at this point. You know what's a really good
black deck, which is pretty good.
Yeah. I kind of like Drakehaven. That seems like a pretty good bulk one to keep an eye on. I like Drakehaven a lot. I don't know if, I mean, it was kind of like a thing. I don't know if it's still a thing. I don't know if I've seen enough results coming in. Like I'm just scrolling through like Goldfish right now. But that seems like a pretty good bulk card to like keep an eye on.
I mean, yeah, you can always sell them. I mean, they buy list for like $0.25 or $0.50. So they there's tons of casual demand in standards, like standard casual. And I think even just generally, like casual players just like that. Anything that just spits out flyers, you know, is cool in the casual circles.
Who said you weren't professional? We're all professional here. I was just stating the obvious. It happened. It's okay.
Yeah.
Felidar Guardian or whatever, the rare from BFZ. Watch the bat buy list.
Oh,
yeah, that's always a pretty good casual hit.
Yeah, that's another one that's always like 50¢ on buy list, 25 to 50¢ on buy lists. The thing that you gain life, it's like a 4/7, and every time I don't remember what it does. It's like a 4/7, yeah. And then it gains life when something happens. Hang on.
Seriously though, it did increase with no play, but regardless of that, it was a good card to draw attention to, because it can be powerful in the right settings. So they were certainly on point with that one. They definitely dug up a treasure. I don't know. I'm using like really horrible puns. I'm tired, but all right, Tark, hopefully we answered everyone's questions. Thank you so much. Everyone, we're going to do this again next week. We will have Jeremy from Cartel Aristocrats joining us for sure. We'll have to work out some timing with, you know, school and stuff. No, we won't. Finals. Oh, right. Okay.
Well, we'll work on
having Jeremy on. One day we'll have him on very soon.
All right, guys.
Take care, everyone, and have a good one. This is the QS Cast signing out.